You are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 104.9, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge.
I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy, a Yankee Doodle do or die, a real live nephew of my Uncle Sam's, born on the 4th of July. I've got a Yankee Doodle sweetheart, she's my Yankee Doodle joy. Yankee Doodle came to London just to ride the ponies. I am the Yankee Doodle boy. Give my regards to Broadway. Remember me to Herald Square. Tell all the gang on 42nd Street that I will soon be there. Forever in peace may you wave. You're the emblem of the land I love, the home of the free and the brave. Every heart beats true under red, white, and blue, where there's never a boast or a brag. But should old acquaintance be forgot, keep your eye on the grand old flag.
You're a grand old
red, white, and blue, where there's never a boast or a brag. But should old acquaintance be forgot, keep your eye on the grand old flag. Over there, send the word over there, that the Yanks are coming, the Yanks are coming, the drums drum. Ride the ponies. I am the Yankee Doodle boy. I am the Yankee Doodle boy.
This is Bruce Kaplan wishing everyone out in our great radio audience a most happy and safe 4th of July. To me, I thank God that my grandfather walked across Europe in 1898 until he reached England and managed to board a ship heading to our great, wonderful country. He arrived in Seattle at the time of the Klondike Gold Rush. For 2 years, he sluiced gold from the rivers of Nome. As a gold miner, he wasn't too successful, but in 1901, he came back to Seattle and resided there until he died at 92 in 1972. When Grandpa spoke of coming to America, his eyes would tear up and he would tell me to always cherish and love the land of our great nation. On this 4th of July, I want to play a few patriotic programs from the past and some patriotic music too. We just listened to the wonderful George M. Cohan medley. Cohan always said he was born on the 4th of July, but in reality, he was born on the 3rd. He died in November 1942 and lived long enough to see the motion picture of his life, Yankee Doodle Dandy. The star was James Cagney. In 1942, they did a promo of the film Yankee Doodle Dandy on the radio. On this 4th, we're going to hear the real voice of George M. Cohan, and then we're going to listen to James Cagney in the 1942 promo for the movie Yankee Doodle Dandy. At the conclusion of our show, we're going to listen to a Father Knows Best comedy about the 4th of July. Happy holiday, everyone, and happy birthday to the most wonderful nation on God's green earth. Now you'll hear the real George M. Cohan at a Catholic benefit dinner in 1938, along with the wonderful Al Smith.
One of the main speakers of the evening was a man who loved New York in the way that George M. did. He was the former governor of the state and one-time candidate for the presidency, the late Al Smith.
I'm going to go back to when I first saw George. It was 14th Street, and he was playing in a little comedy, running for office. And listen, it was before I began to run, and that's a long time ago. It was before the development of the automobile. It was before we knew anything about airplanes as passenger carriers. And it was before the income tax. And that seems certainly a long time ago. Now, I don't know whether you've ever noticed this or not, but it's apparent to me that history is recorded largely in song. There were songs connected with the Civil War, songs connected with the Spanish War, but of all the war songs that I remember, none gave greater inspiration to the marching millions than did the song expressing the devotion of America to the cause of world civilization, and we won't come back until it's over. Over there.
Over there, over there. Send the word over there. That the Yanks are coming, the Yanks are coming. The drum, drum coming everywhere. So prepare, say a prayer.
And I have a little something in common. I came from the lower end of Manhattan. I was born in the last house on South Street. Below me was junk shops and dealers in marine hardware and paints and so forth that was required for the clipper trade of the late 80s and the early 90s. Naturally, with a great devotion to downtown, I just listened to George when he sang, "Come on downtown. Come on with me. Come on downtown. We'll have a jubilee. Herald Square, I've been there, but it's not for mine. Come on downtown, and I'll show you."
That was Alfred E. Smith, one of the most colorful and beloved figures of his time. It was a golden moment for George M. Cohan that night when he finally stood up to speak to his friends.
This gathering here tonight, it's more of a tribute to the memory of my father than anything else. And, of course, that makes it doubly thrilling to me. I realize that occasion of this time that a man should really have sat down and prepared a substantial speech of some kind. But that, of course, that's asking a great deal of a song and dance man. Especially a song and dance man who tried so hard not to be a song and dance man. And then had to go back being a song and dance man in order to earn a living. About a week ago, the New York Times called me up. And the fellow on the phone asked me if I would send them an advance copy of my speech that I was to deliver at the Catholic Actors Guild dinner. And that kind of made a hit with me. I told him, I said, why? I said, I haven't any speech. At least not yet. Well, he said, you know, the dinner's next Sunday. I says, that's what I'm talking about, yes. Then I tried to explain to him that I was the kind of a fellow that never even started to write a second act until the first act had been in rehearsal at least a week. He couldn't quite understand that, however. But that's the way it is. I remember very well when I was a playwright in the old days. A fella come up and ask me during the rehearsal of a first act, say, what am I going to wear in the second act? I had a set speech for him. I said, well, I don't know, but if you tell me what you'd like to wear, maybe you can give me an idea for a second act. I always wanted to be able to make a good speech all my life. I've been wanting to make a good speech. And I always wanted to play a good game of pool, too, but I somehow... I never could make the grade either way. I don't know why it was. However, I'm satisfied. It's all right. I'm glad to be working for Sam Harris. It's all right with me. He worked for me for 15 years. He didn't know it at the time, but he's found it out since, I guess. Harris man, by the way, is a very surprising person. Full of surprises. I know he's handed me many a surprise. I don't mean by that that I didn't always know that he was a great showman, great judge of plays and all that sort of thing. But I mean, he is really, he's a surprising man. I remember the first time he surprised me. Of course, when Sam and I first went in business together, I naturally thought Sam had a lot of money, you know. Now, we didn't talk about that until we were in the middle of rehearsals of our first show. And when he told me he was broke, that was my first surprise. He seemed to be just as much surprised as I was when I told him I was broke, too. And the members of the company were very much surprised when they found out we were both broke. However, we did all right. We went along for a long time. Eventually, we had a lot of shows, and we got a lot of theaters. And I remember when we started to accumulate our theater interests, I remember I went to my father. I was a little bit worried about coming too involved. I told him what we were doing. I asked him, I said, do you think we ought to hang on to these theaters? And I remember my father's advice. I remembered very well. He said, well, I don't know much about whether or not you ought to hang on to the theaters, but you take my tip, kid, and hang on to your dancing shoes. But as to get back to this speech business again, I read in the paper the other day, I was reading Mrs. Roosevelt's column. So you can see that I give the papers an awful reading. Reading where she told about some fellow that went around, that she'd watched him, I think for 2 or 3 years. He'd been making the same speech no matter where he went. Made the same speech in the same way, same delivery, same inflection, same everything, same gestures, everything he did. She heard it, she said something like a half a dozen or a dozen times. It's always the same speech, and he always got away with it. Well, it's getting very late. And I'm going to tell you that I beat that fella to it. I made the same curtain speech for about 25 years. And I'm going to make that speech now. And I don't think I'm out of order making it. Because spiritually, I really think that my father thanks you. My mother thanks you. My sister thanks you. And as for myself, that goes without saying.
That was a night to remember and be thankful for, because during most of the few years that remained, George M. was ill. Shortly before he died in 1942, he caught one last glimpse of Broadway. He stopped at a theater where they were showing the film based on his life, Yankee Doodle Dandy. He stayed only a few minutes, and then went home to wait for the last curtain call. The curtain call on a life that became a legend.
The following is a radio promo for Yankee Doodle Dandy. It was recorded 1 month before George M. Cohan died in the year 1942. Hope you enjoy.
This is James Cagney.
Joan Leslie.
Paula Houston.
And this is Jean Cagney.
This is the story of a real Yankee Doodle Dandy, a man who told the world proudly, "I am an American." It is the story of George M. Cohan, who loved and understood his country, and through singing his song, that country learned to understand itself.
From that day, people say I understand my country. However, not long ago, I created a misunderstanding without meaning to. It really had me worried. I was impersonating the President of the United States in a play called "I'd Rather Be Right," when I received a summons to appear at the White House. Well, I was really upset when I walked into the President's office.
Well, how's my double?
I'm not sure, Mr. President. You'll have to give me time to work on that one.
Are you sure you'll realize why I sent for you, Mr. Cohan?
No, Mr. President. No. But if it's because you object to my impersonating you on the stage, why...
Well, you know, Mr. Cohan, I remember seeing you and your family, the four Cohans, when I was going to school near Boston.
Well, I was a pretty cocky kid in those days. Regular Yankee Doodle Dandy, always in a parade or following one, wherever there was a flag.
I hope you haven't outgrown the habit. It's a great quality.
Well, I guess I got the idea from my father, Mr. President. He ran off to the Civil War at 13. Some years after the war, he married my mother, and they toured the variety theaters of the country as Mr. and Mrs. Jerry Cohan, the Irish Darling. Then on the 4th of July, 1878 in Providence, Rhode Island, my father was playing a variety theater alone.
Larry O'Leary is my name by trade. I am a dancing master. There's no one can teach the same. Don't teach it any faster. It's easy, very easy, if you'll watch every twist, every turn. Keep your eyes upon me and surprise you will be at the dancing you have yet to learn. Keep your eyes upon me and surprise you will be at the dancing you have yet to learn.
Mother should have been with him on the stage, but she was busy in a smaller production. Father hurried to her as soon as he had finished his turn. But that was one time made an entrance ahead of Father. Are you all right, Nellie?
Yes, Jerry.
Is everything all right?
Everything's grand, Jerry. You're the brand new father of a brand new boy.
A boy? And born on the 4th of July. Praise be. We call him George Washington Cohan.
Jerry's a good, he's fine, but the Washington would be too long for dear boy.
Yeah, that's right. And how about a good, short Irish name? Dennis or Michael?
George Michael Cohan. I like that name.
Well, Mr. President, I was 6 or 7 years old before I realized you weren't celebrating my birthday on the 4th of July.
I can understand that.
In fact, life for me has been a roundup of parades and songs. Often, of course, they went together, but not always. When I wrote Mary, the only parade I had in mind was the one that takes a man and a girl, three girls, down the aisle. I won't forget the night my Mary sang the song I'd written for her.
My mother's name was Mary, who was so good and true. Because her name was Mary, they called me Mary too. She wasn't gay or airy, as plain as she could be. I hate to meet a Mary who calls herself Mary. There is his Mary, Mary, plain as any name can be. But with propriety will say Mary. But it was Mary, Mary, long before that you came. And there is something there that sounds so sweet. It's a grand old name.
Gee, it's a wonderful feeling, having a name such a music. You know, I'd like everybody to know that it was written for me, that I'm Dean.
Well, that's easy. How would you like a lifetime job? George M. Cohan's leading lady. Wanted to play contract, and no option.
I think I might like it, Mr. Cohan. Could I be a sample of my part in the script?
Well, here's how it starts. How would you like the first reading?
Could we have another rehearsal?
Mary, Mary, long before the passion came, for there is something there that sounds so strange. It's a grand old name. I didn't get as quick or effective results every time, Mr. President. Another parade I used to lead was a parade of frustrated playwrights marching from one producer to another. I had just about given up hope of ever getting my musical show, Little Johnny Jones, produced when I walked into Rector's famous restaurant one night. Sam Harris was seated at a table talking to another man who didn't appear to be interested in the sales talk Sam was giving him. I didn't know Sam's name then, but I'd met him in several producers' offices trying to sell his play, so I knew what he was after.
When the villain tells the boy, I'll tell your girl who you really are, and if you help me hold up this little you'll have the audience in the aisle.
True, just like me, walking out of the theater. I tell you, before I put $10,000 of my wife's money into a show, it's got to have songs, dances, and lots of girls.
That was my cue. Schwab wanted songs, dances, and lots of girls, and I had a musical comedy under my arm. So I moved in and told Harris under my breath, "Mister, I have a musical. Bob won't buy your play, but if you help me sell in the musical, we're partners."
"You say, what can I do?" "Well, partner, did you sell the musical at Eaton's office?"
"Well, they're ready to sign the contract as soon as we can get over to their offices."
"Come on, then, let's go."
But, did you say something about the musical? By heaven, I heard about it."
"Oh, you wouldn't be interested. It's nothing but a lot of hit tunes and thousands of girls."
"Yes, thousands of girls."
"Yeah, and lots of music.
I don't mind music under those circumstances. Why ain't I producing it?"
"That's a good question."
"I will give you my check for $10,000 right now."
"That's the perfect answer.
Let me be the first to congratulate you, Mr.
Schwab." "Oh, thank you, thank you. You are both very kind to let me in on this. By the way, does our music have a name?"
"It's called Little Johnny Jones. All about Todd Sloan, a famous jockey.
Is it as,
Give my regards to Broadway. Remember me to Herald Square. And tell all the gang at 42nd Street that I will soon be there. And whisper of how I yearn to mingle with that old-time throng. Give my regards to old Broadway and say that I'll be there ere long."
"We'll give your regards to Broadway. Remember you to Herald Square. Gang
was a pretty good tune this day, Mr. President, but my favorite song from Little Johnny Jones was Yankee Doodle Boy. Remember?
That's all the candy. I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy. I'm glad I am. I'm a real-life Yankee Doodle. Made my name and fame and boodle just as Mr. Doodle did by riding on a pony. I love to listen to the Dixie strain. I long to see the girl I left behind me. That ain't a Josh. She's a Yankee, by gosh.
Oh, can you sing
anything about a Yankee? That's all for me.
Yankee
Doodle, the Yankee
from the
USA. We'll ride the pony, Yankee Doodle, English Derby Day.
Yankee broken
records,
every track and every
beat. So Yankee Doodle's gonna be the boy they have to beat.
Sportsman of the British now to follow his career. Have offered Johnny anything to keep him over here.
But all the money in the bank of England couldn't pay. Enough to keep young Johnny Jones away from old Broadway.
If you want to take a dip, be sure and don't you think.
Have your house mortgage, pop your watches, pawn your rings.
And put it all on Yankee Doodle, Johnny Jones.
I am going to give America the English Derby Cup.
It's gonna give America the
Yankee
Doodle Cup.
I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy. Yankee Doodle do or die. I'll be my nephew, are my Uncle Sam. Born on the 4th of July. I've got a Yankee Doodle sweetheart. She's my Yankee Doodle dog. Yankee Doodle came to London just to ride the ponies. I am the Yankee Doodle boy.
He's a Yankee Doodle dandy, a Yankee Doodle do or die. A real life nephew of his Uncle Sam, born on the 4th of July. He's got a Yankee Doodle sweetheart. He's a Yankee Doodle boy. Yankee Doodle came to London just to ride the ponies.
Horses at the Derby are now on the paddock. Take your pick, ladies and gentlemen.
Good luck, Johnny, success to you. All the best of the best to you. We'll make a bet to meet the rest to you. But you've got what it takes to win.
There they are, going to the post, all in good condition. That Yankee Doodle on the end, a wonderful position. Look at him rear, he's broken line, he's simply wild to run. Now he's back in line again, there's the starting gun. They're off!
Come on, Yankee Doodle, we
intend
to hold the bottle line. Run, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up.
Yankee takes the lead.
Come on, break away, they're strong, the powder burns their hay, they're gone. Run, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up. Show a little speed.
At the quarter, he's gaining. At the turn now, he's reining his horse.
Let's go, 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 Yankee, go.
The half mark is cruising, but he seems to be losing his lead.
Hurry up, hurry up, hurry up. We simply have to win.
He'll never win, he'll never win. The other nags are closing in. Down to third, in second place. Looks as though he's closing the race. He's got him in the pocket, he can't get in the clear. In the stretch, here they come, he's falling to the rear. Lost the race at the frame, he'll find out who's to blame. Hail the name of Johnny Jones. That's it, ladies and gentlemen, it's all over. Yankee Doodle let him down. We'll either pasture him in clover or have him hauling rubbish in London town.
Goodbye, Johnny, we're through with you. We'll have nothing to do with you.
See here, young fellow, you've been dishonored, and we, the judges, find that you be suspended for throwing the race.
I am a Yankee Doodle Dandy. Yankee Doodle, do or die. Yankee Doodle came to London just to ride the ponies. I am that Yankee Doodle boy.
Yankee Doodle came to London just to ride the ponies. He is that Yankee Doodle boy. He's a Yankee Doodle dandy, a Yankee Doodle do or die. A real
Back in the White House office of the President of the United States, where he has been summoned by presidential order, George M. Cohan is nervously continuing the story of his life.
Well, Mr. President, little Johnny Jones is a great financial success. And it wasn't long before the four Cohans, mother, father, my sister Josie, and I, were appearing in George Washington, Jr. They all sang a big number in that production, The Grand Old Flag.
There's a feeling comes a-stealing, and it set my brain a-reeling when I listen to the music of a military band. Any tune like Yankee Doodle simply sets me off my noodle. It's that patriotic something that no one can understand.
We're
from the land of God. Melody on firing, it's so inspiring.
Hurrah, hurrah, we'll join the jubilee.
And that's going some for the Yankee by gum. Red, white, and blue, I am for you. Honest, you're a grand old flag. You're a grand old flag, you're a high-flying flag. And forever in peace may you reign. You're the emblem of the land I love. The home of the free and the brave. Every heart beats true on the red, white, and blue. Where there's never a boast or brag. But the old acquaintance, be forgot, keep your eye on the grand old flag.
You're a grand old flag, you're a high flying flag, and forever in peace may you wave. You're the emblem of the land I love, the home of the free and the brave. Every heart is true on the red line of blue, where there's never a bone or brag. But the old acquaintance,
be forgot, keep your eye on that grand old flag.
And listen, listen to that applause, George.
Oh, they'd like to see me. Wonderful.
They won't stop, George. That's what? Walton and Franklin.
Well, what can I say to that?
Well, tell them anything. Just so you tell them, well, you know, thank you.
All right, but you all have to come with me.
Mother, thank you. Father, thank you. Sister, thank you. Me. It was just the beginning, Mr. President. Right from then on was a series of new shows, new theaters, new towns, trains. And all of a sudden, it was 1917. Our enemies of today were our enemies then. Declared war on Germany. Like every other man, I tried to enlist, but turned me down. As I walked out of the army doctor's office, one of the fellows standing outside said,
"Don't worry, pal. We'll take care of him over there."
Give me an idea. Over there. I'm repeating that phrase myself. Over there. Over there. Over there. It sounded like a great title for a song. And I heard Homer work on it. The drums rum and the so prepare, say a prayer, send the word to beware. We'll be over, we're coming over, and we won't come back till it's over there.
Why, I wanted to hear the story of your life. It has a direct bearing on my sending for you. Here. Do you know what this is?
That's the Medal of Honor, isn't it?
Yes. Now let's see what the inscription says. To George M. Cohan, for his contribution to the American spirit. I congratulate you, Mr. Cohan.
Are you sure that isn't some mistake?
Quite sure.
This matters only to people who've given their lives to the country. I'm just a song and dance man. Everybody knows that.
A man may give his life to his country in many different ways, Mr. Cohan. Your songs were the symbol of the American spirit. Over there was just as powerful a weapon as any cannon, as any battleship we had in the First World War.
Don't worry about this country, Mr. President. Where else in the world today could a plain guy like me sit down and talk things over with a head man?
Well, that's about as good a definition of America as any I've ever heard. Is there something wrong, Mr. Cohan?
I'm sorry. It's the same old trouble. Thought I heard a parade coming down Pennsylvania Avenue.
It is a parade. Don't you recognize the music?
I ought to.
The marching song of 1917 is the marching song of 1942. If I were Hitler, Hirohito, or Mussolini and heard that, I'd take one long look at history and start running.
Now, in this great little station, we're going to listen to a wonderful Father Knows Best episode with a 4th of July theme that was broadcast in July of the 1950s. Hope you enjoy.
Yes, it's Father Knows Best, transcribed in Hollywood, starring Robert Young as Father. A half-hour visit with your neighbors, the Andersons. Be it ever so peaceful and ever so fair, be the sun shining bright at your door, there's nothing so sad or so full of despair as the morning after the night before. It's breakfast time in Springfield, and in the white frame house on Maple Street, all is not well. The 4th of July was a big day for the Andersons, but not as big as it might have been. That's why, on the 5th of July, the family goes to work on the greatest fall guy the world has ever known. Poor old Father. Like this.
But you said we weren't allowed to shoot off firecrackers.
That's right.
Well, Jimmy Woody had firecrackers and he shot them off.
Kathy, I've told you a dozen times, shooting off firecrackers is against the law.
They shot them off in the park.
You eat your breakfast.
Well, didn't they?
Betty, do as your father tells you.
Can't I even talk?
Eat your breakfast, dear.
Jumping creepers. Everybody else got to shoot off firecrackers except me. I never get to do nothing.
You never get to do anything.
You said it. Everybody else.
Kathy, for the 10 millionth time, the use of firecrackers within the city limits of Springfield is illegal.
Then why did they shoot them off in the park?
Because that was a fireworks display. It's entirely different.
Mom, I can't find my other shoe.
Look under your bed, dear.
I did look. Never mind. I found it.
But hurry up or you won't get any breakfast at all.
Okay, Dad.
Couldn't find ears if they weren't fastened on.
Why are you shooting firecrackers in the park different?
Because it was part of the city's celebration, that's why.
Jimmy Woody shot off firecrackers, and I'm as much a part of the city as he is.
Kathy.
His father didn't tell him. It was different.
Margaret, may I please have my coffee?
Of course, dear.
Every time somebody does something and I can't, it's different.
There you are.
Thank you.
Everybody gets a bigger allowance than I do, but it's different.
Kathy, in just about 1 minute...
I have to go to bed when it isn't even dark, but that's different, too.
Margaret, will you please tell her to be quiet?
People don't even like me around here. I'm going to join the WACs. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to show the whole bunch
Kathy,
of you.
Kathy, be quiet.
But why can everybody else...
Eat your breakfast.
Gee whiz. I don't know what she's got to complain about. I was the only girl at the whole dance who had shoulder straps on her dress.
Now, don't you start.
Father, if you just wouldn't be so old-fashioned.
I am not old-fashioned, but I will not have my daughter traipsing around in a dress that's held up by nothing but a prayer and a city ordinance.
Jim, there's really no reason why...
Well, for the love of... Margaret, one of these days, that boy is going right through the stairs, so help me.
I don't think so, dear, but I'll speak to him again.
It's like living in the house with a bull rhinoceros.
Good morning, everybody. What's cooking?
Father is.
Betty, please.
Bud, is there any reason why you can't come down the stairs like a normal human being?
How do they do it?
They walk.
That's what I did.
You... May I have the cream and sugar, please?
Oh, here you are, dear.
Thank you.
Nobody even cares if kids have fun on the 4th of July.
Dad...
Kathy, let me explain it to you once more. The reason children are not permitted to have firecrackers is a very simple one.
They don't want us to have any fun.
They don't want you to get hurt.
Dad...
Jimmy Woody had firecrackers and he didn't get hurt.
Good.
He only got 3 little blisters.
Fine.
On each hand.
Dad.
What is it, Bud?
You know how old Jerry Wilson is?
87?
He's 12.
Well, he certainly had me fooled.
Would you care for some more toast, dear?
Well, thank you. This will be fine.
And his father bought him a gasoline scooter.
Bud.
I'm 15, and I had to go to the picnic on a bicycle.
How would you like to wear an evening gown with shoulder straps? I don't even like the 4th of July. I never saw such an awful day in my whole life.
Well, you all had a pretty miserable time yesterday, didn't you?
Well, gosh, Dad, if a 12-year-old kid can have a gasoline
scooter... You had nothing on your busy little mind but firecrackers and shoulder straps and gasoline scooters. Important things like that.
Father.
Nobody thought about the 4th of July, what it means, what it is. When I was a boy, the biggest thrill of the year was raising the American flag on Independence Day. But you were busy with more important things. Maybe that's the trouble with a lot of people in this country. They haven't the time to honor their flag or think of what it means to them as individuals, as a people.
Holy cow, Dad.
Be quiet, Dad, and listen.
Yes, ma'am.
We've all lost sight of the fact that the freedoms we take so much for granted, the right to speak our minds, the right to live as we choose, weren't always ours. Less than 200 years ago, our ancestors had to fight for them. And they didn't intend that Independence Day should be spent killing one another on the highways or blowing ourselves to bits with firecrackers. They fought, and some of them died, to give us freedom. Now we've forgotten them.
Father, we know all about Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin. I know about George Washington.
I don't mean people like that, kitten. I mean plain, ordinary people like ourselves. The families of merchants and lawyers and hard-working farmers. Those are the people we've forgotten. The people who fashioned a whole new nation out of blood and tears and gossamer dreams. You know... 175 years ago, there was no United States of America. There was only a feeling of great unrest and resentment among the American people. In the larger cities, Boston, Philadelphia, New York, there was a sort of seething tension in the streets, in the coffee shops, everywhere. But life went on. People lived as they must always live.
Mama, I don't like cornmeal mush.
It's very good for you, Kathleen.
All I ever get is cornmeal mush.
We'll have no arguments, child. Eat your breakfast and be quiet.
Yes, Papa. Father?
Betsy, this is hardly the time to interrupt your father.
But, Mother...
Later, dear, please.
I'm quite finished with my newspaper. May I have my coffee, please?
Yes, dear. I hope I roasted the beans long enough this time.
I'm sure you did, my dear. Thank you.
James...
Margaret, if you and Betsy intend to speak of that dress again, may I warn you now that you are wasting your breath.
Father, the Widow Southgate says there's a latest style, and if only you weren't so old-fashioned...
I am not old-fashioned. I pride myself on being as modern and as well-informed as these changing times allow. But I will not permit a daughter of mine to risk the vapors in a low-cut bodice.
Dear, the Widow Southgate tells me...
Mother!
Jamie, how many times have you been told not to shout from the top of the stair?
But I can't find the buckle for my other shoe.
Margaret, will you please instruct your son...
Jamie, have you looked under your bedstead?
Yes, ma'am, I've looked... Never mind, it was inside of the shoe.
I'm very concerned about that young man.
James, he's only a boy.
He's 15 years old and preparing to enter the university. How can he expect to make his way in the world if he can't keep track of his shoe buckles?
Mother, you were going to tell Father what the Widow Southgate said. Well...
Margaret, I have told you repeatedly that we cannot do business with the Widow Southgate.
But James, I've known Amanda Southgate all my life.
She has been denied a permit under the terms of the Lord North Restraining Act. And as an attorney sworn to uphold the law, I cannot permit you to trade with her establishment.
James, you know as well as I that the law is unjust.
We have already taken steps to ask that it be changed.
As you've asked that other laws be changed? As you've pleaded for representation in the government of the colonies? As you've asked...
Margaret...
When will you stop asking? When will you demand that we be heard?
When we have exhausted every peaceful method of petition. When we know, deep in our hearts, that the last stone has been turned. Jamie! Jamie! Madam, something must be done about the manner in which your son defies the laws of gravity.
Has Parliament passed a law about that, too?
Good morning. I trust everyone is well.
Good morning.
Good morning, brother.
Jamie?
Yes, Father?
What are you trying to establish in this constant attack on a perfectly innocent staircase?
I?
I presume that was you descending the stair. Or was it a band of horsemen pursuing a wild boar through our sitting room?
Father, I'm certainly glad you mentioned it. Do you know Jeremiah Wilson?
Did I mention Jeremiah Wilson?
No, but he's only 12, and his father bought him his own horse.
Jamie.
I'm 3 years older than he is, and do I have a horse? I have to walk to school.
Jamie.
And that's a long walk, 8 squares, and everybody else in the whole school.
Jamie.
Yes, sir?
A boy who cannot keep track of his shoe buckles cannot be entrusted with his own horse.
How can you misplace a horse?
If there were a way, you'd manage.
Betsy, no one asked for your opinion.
I didn't say anything, did I, Mama?
No, Kathleen.
I've been very good, haven't I, Mama?
Yes, Kathleen.
Do I still have to eat my cornmeal mush, Mama?
Yes, Kathleen.
Gee, Willikins.
Jamie, the front door.
Nobody's afraid that I'll misplace the front door.
I could close my eyes and find the front door in the dark.
I don't know. When I was a boy, my father never permitted this turbulence at his breakfast table. Breakfast was a quiet meal, peaceful and calm. There was none of this excitement and confusion. Everything was well ordered and contained. Everything...
Mother, it's Mr. Smith.
Elizabeth!
Oh, Margaret, Margaret, you've got to help me. We're in the most terrible trouble.
Girls, perhaps you'd best go outdoors and take your brother with you.
But I haven't finished my mush.
Go along, Kathleen.
Good day, Mr. Smith. Come along, Katie. Don't call me Katie.
Now, Elizabeth?
Oh, I'm just beside myself. Nothing like this has ever happened in the entire history of our family.
Elizabeth, may I suggest that you calm yourself?
You. The entire affair is your fault.
My fault?
Elizabeth!
You were the one who put him up to it. You were the one who told him not to pay his taxes.
You mean Hector, I presume?
My husband. If only he hadn't listened to you.
Elizabeth, I assure you...
You gave him those articles on freedom. You explained to him that the Sugar and Molasses Act was illegal. You told him to petition the repeal of the Restraining Act. You told him
all... What I told Hector was true. The advice I gave him was sound. Our petitions are valid. Our protests are impeccable. If we stand united, no one can be punished.
No? Then why is Hector in jail?
Oh, Jane.
Why, just send us the can and unused portion, and we'll gladly refund your money. Our address is right on every familiar blue tin. Yes, to please the world's greatest coffee expert, your husband. Serve him Maxwell House coffee. Always good. To the last drop. It's moments later in the white frame house on Maple Street. But the Andersons aren't conscious of time. They've been swept back to the days of the American Revolution. To the story of a family much like their own. They've moved through the streets of an early American city, through the doors of the Court of Justice, and there they sit quietly, patiently, while an 18th century Anderson prepares to defend the rights of his friend Hector Smith. Like this.
Hector, you must be truthful with me. Did you say anything more?
Jim, I take my oath. I told the man just what you told me to, that I was not going to pay taxes unless I had a voice in my own government.
And naturally, you had to say it to a man who was a representative of the king.
Elizabeth, how was I supposed to know
my that... My husband. Thousands of people in the city, and he has to argue with tax collectors.
Elizabeth, I'm sure it isn't as bad as you fancy. Is it, James?
I don't know, Margaret. In these affairs, one can never be sure.
Oh, the disgrace. That I, a Stuyvesant on my mother's side, should live to see the day that my own husband...
The court will rise.
Oh,
Margaret.
Yes, dear.
They're about to begin. Why don't you take Elizabeth to a seat?
All right, James. Come along, dear. We'll find a comfortable bed.
If only he wouldn't argue with people. If only he would...
The Crown calls Hector Smith.
Jim, maybe if I plead guilty, they'll give me a lighter fine.
You can't plead guilty, Hector. The tax is unjust, and we must prove it so.
May it please your lordship.
Are you Hector Smith?
I am James Anderson, your lordship, a solicitor engaged by Hector Smith for his defense.
Well, well, step forward. Don't stand there.
Yes, my lord.
Jim, why don't you ask him?
Please, Hector, not yet.
The bailiff will read the charge against the prisoner.
May it please your worship.
Silence, Hector. Please be quiet.
The bailiff will proceed.
Hector Smith, territorial colonist, is hereby charged by the Crown with failure to pay his just taxes under Section 7 of the Act governing the sale of sugar and molasses.
How do you plead?
Your worship...
May it please your lordship, this is not a proper charge, and a plea cannot therefore be entered. Not proper? Ridiculous. I drew the charge myself.
Your lordship,
I insist that the prisoner plead. Is he guilty or not guilty?
Is he guilty or not guilty of what, my lord? Of not paying his taxes? Yes, of this he is guilty, but these taxes are levied without reason. They are an affront to the principles of justice and democracy.
Mr. Anderson, I like not your tone.
Nor I a court where the magistrate draws the charges.
Jim, they'll wind up by hanging me.
Hector, will you please stop worrying?
May I remind the solicitor that he does his client a disservice by such outbursts?
I ask your lordship's pardon. It shall not happen again.
Very well. I shall ask once more. How does the prisoner plead?
He pleads not guilty, your lordship, and a host of citizens stand firm at his side. Nowhere in the history of government...
The prisoner will rise.
If it please your lordship...
The prisoner will rise. Hector Smith.
Yes, your worship?
I find you guilty as charged.
But your lordship...
You will serve 18 months at hard labor and your property is confiscated to the Crown.
No!
Remove the prisoner.
This is infamous, your lordship. Parliament has agreed to consider our problem.
Mr. Anderson, we have no time for such trifles.
Trifles? Since when is a man's freedom a trifle?
Our courts are cluttered with this colonial rabble. He's satisfied that I did not order him hanged.
Your lordship...
Jim, don't risk your own neck.
I have a right to speak.
I order you to be silent.
And I demand that I be heard.
Bailey!
We have all been silent too long.
We've asked only a voice in our own government, and to no avail. Now we shall speak with a voice of liberty and justice. We shall raise a cry of freedom that will echo through the hearts of all mankind.
This is treason.
This is truth. The God who gave us life gave us liberty as well. We are free men endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. And among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
The militia!
Jim, it's come. It's here.
Bailey, at last it's here. The final word has been said. The final stone has been turned.
Bailey!
He's gone, my lord. And gone is tyranny. Gone is oppression. Gone is the iron heel that ground justice into the dust. We are aflame, my lord. The torch of freedom is lit at last.
And just as soon will be snuffed out. They'll shoot you down as they did in Boston.
Let them shoot, my lord. We are patriots, and our blood will nourish the streets and meadows and wooded hills. Our bones will bleach in the summer sun and chill in the winter snow. But if one man survives, he will be free. From his sinews will come a new race of men. From his heart will come a new life. Through him we shall build a new nation in which our children will live without fear, in which justice and freedom will prevail. Through him will be born a new world. America!
Did that happen on the 4th of July?
Well, not exactly, Kitten. That sort of thing went on for years, all over the colonies.
Well, what did happen on the 4th of July?
Boy, you a dope. They signed the Declaration of Independence.
But I wish you wouldn't speak to Kathy that way.
But how can she be so dumb?
All right, genius. Who signed it?
What?
Who signed the Declaration of Independence?
Oh, gosh. Practically everybody.
But the Declaration of Independence was signed by 56 men.
Well, that's a lot, isn't it?
Daddy!
Yes, Kathleen?
There's only one thing I don't understand. What's so wonderful about the Declaration of Independence?
He'll tell you some other time, dear.
Margaret, if you don't mind, I'd just as soon tell her now.
While he's in the groove.
While I have all three of my knot-headed children in a listening mood.
What did I do?
Not a thing. And let's keep it that way.
Jim, if you're going to tell
them... All right, honey. The Declaration of Independence was written not to point out new principles or new arguments or even to say things which had never been said before, but to put before the people of the world an announcement of the fact that the American people considered themselves from that day forward an independent nation. Do you understand that?
Oh, sure.
Dear, she didn't understand one word you said.
Of course she did.
Maybe she did, but I sure didn't.
Well, I couldn't have made it clearer. You understood me, didn't you, Bud?
Yes, sir. Well, I promised Joe I'd help him do something.
What did I say?
About what?
The Declaration of Independence.
You mean the whole thing?
Or any small portion thereof.
This is going to be good.
Well, you said that the Declaration of Independence was important because it told everybody that on the 4th of July, 56 fellas got together and, well, anyway, it's the birthday of the United States. That's the important part.
Oh, that's what it is.
Well, you could put it that way. And you know, come to think of it, isn't it strange that no one ever gives the country a birthday present?
Jim, really?
I mean it, honey. Everybody else gets them.
Father, if you'll buy the wool, I'll knit the country a pair of argyles.
Take her up on it, Dad.
How will she know what size?
That was a joke, dear.
Another one?
I'm being very serious.
Father, you're not.
I certainly am. We have the good fortune to live in the greatest country in the entire world. A country that has given us blessings far richer than we know. Our country has given us a heritage of freedom. Freedom of speech, freedom from want, freedom from fear, freedom to worship in any church we may choose. It gathered us all sorts of Americans from the far-flung corners of the earth and made for us a home. Give me your tired, your poor, it said, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless tempest-tossed, to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. Our country has a birthday every year, celebrated on the 4th of July, and all of us, no matter how rich or how poor, can afford the only gift it wants, a pledge of undying loyalty and devotion, a vow that in the year ahead, we'll remember and observe the simple principles of democracy, a promise that, to the best of our ability, we'll live as Americans.
You are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 104.9, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge. This is Bruce Kaplan signing off. Radio Masterpieces is a Seattle Miracle Incorporated production.